For months now, the Biden administration has been extending a federal eviction moratorium to protect tenants struggling to pay their rent during the pandemic. But now the moratorium is over. Really, truly over. That's because the Supreme Court ruled last week that the CDC has overstepped its authority and that for the moratorium to continue, Congress would need to authorize it. But that's unlikely to happen, as White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters on Friday.
What we're trying to do here is prevent people from being evicted from their homes. If there were enough votes to pass an eviction moratorium in Congress, it would have happened. It hasn't happened.
And while the White House says it's working with states on solutions, hundreds of thousands, potentially millions of tenants across the country are now at risk of losing their homes, including tenants in the state of New York, where more than 830,000 households are behind on their rent. We're joined today by Sia Weaver, campaign coordinator of Housing Justice for All in New York. Sia, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Peter Hepburn, assistant professor of sociology at Rutgers University, Newark, and part of the Eviction Lab at Princeton University. Peter, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Sia, from your perch, what's the significance of this Supreme Court ruling?
Well, it's really just devastating. As you said, 830,000 households or more really are behind on rent in New York, and 77% of them are people of color. The thing that's the most painful about all of this is our state also has $2.7 billion in rental assistance money meant to solve this problem, and we've been unable to spend it. So this is a real wave of evictions that should be preventable, but for some reason has not been prevented.
Yeah, and let's get back to the failings of the state in that regard in a bit. Peter, what has the administration's position been so far on the eviction moratoriums?
You know, I think they were certainly very concerned at the end of July about the potential of extending it and then having it struck down, with the understanding that Justice Kavanaugh had issued an opinion earlier this summer suggesting that he was, you know, they were basically allowing the moratorium to stay in place temporarily with the understanding that it wouldn't be extended. And that's what sort of led to the confusion at the end of July and the beginning of August when the moratorium briefly lapsed and then a sort of new version of it was extended. So I think they were expecting this to happen and knew that they were only buying a few extra weeks with the last extension.
And the president himself indicated that he didn't think it was going to hold up to scrutiny. What's your take on that? Did you think that he was correct in that?
It certainly appears that he was. I'm not a legal scholar. I can't speak to the Supreme Court's reasoning on this, but certainly the justices had tipped their hand that this was unlikely to survive further scrutiny, and indeed it did not.
See, what kind of eviction protections have been in place during the pandemic here in New York?
In New York State, we have benefited from a very strong eviction moratorium that has protected thousands of households from losing their homes in the middle of the pandemic. So tenants have been able to file a declaration of hardship, effectively preventing any eviction from moving forward in the state of New York. And we think that this has been critical, not just for keeping people housed, but for preventing the spread of COVID-19 and making sure that people can stay healthy during the pandemic.
Now, one tenant representative I spoke to a few weeks ago said that, you know, a lot of this hangs on whether people actually know about these protections. Are we seeing a problem of people just self-evicting and, you know, putting themselves out there?
Yeah, absolutely. To put some numbers on that, for example, of those 830,000 households who are behind on rent, only about 170,000 of them have actually applied for rental assistance, either because they don't know about it or because of some fear or reluctance. And if you're in that situation, you're very likely to simply be bullied out of your home.
And so then what happens? What are you seeing in terms of when people feel like they have no recourse? Where do they go?
Well, you know, it's really hard to say. Some enter the shelter system. Some go to live with families. They double or triple up. Some, you know, they disappear. We don't know what happens. Households that are self-evicting, that are choosing not to interact with the vast network of affordable housing advocates and social service providers that exist in New York, we don't know what happens to them. And it's terrifying. It's heartbreaking.
And that's here in New York. Peter, what are you seeing in terms of the national landscape?
Yeah, I think it's a similar picture, but without many of the resources and supports that we're able to offer here in the city. So, you know, if you're going through this process in Greenville, South Carolina, you maybe don't have that network of resources that's available and the sort of outreach to people who are potentially at risk of losing their homes. And I think that's going to make the whole process that much harder. And, you know, this is happening at a time when, you know, rents are increasing across the country and the availability of affordable housing has never been more limited. And that means that people who are losing their homes right now are going to have fewer and fewer options available to them. And with that mark of an eviction on your record, you're going to end up settling for, you know, worse housing in a worse neighborhood.
So that's something that actually tracks you over the course of your life. If it happens once, it's not something you can shake off.
No, it's very hard to do that. And, you know, in the case of, you know, a credit report, you have the possibility of going and trying to correct the record. With evictions and with a tenant history, there's no way to correct an incorrect record either. So even a filing that hasn't resulted in an eviction can follow you for quite a long time.
Now, Peter, I know you're not a legal scholar, but to the extent you understand it, the Supreme Court's decision, it was split down ideological lines, correct? What did the minority have to say in terms of trying to extend the moratorium?
You know, the minority appeared to be very cognizant of current public health conditions and concerned about the possibility that a wave of eviction filings and evictions could lead to further spread of COVID-19. And, you know, I think there were a number of good studies that were conducted summer of 2020 and were throughout last year showing that when state level moratoria ended and you saw evictions pick up in those localities, that COVID-19 cases also increased at the same time. And there's a good argument to be made that the sort of doubled up, tripled up housing that Sia was talking about, or the, you know, increased use of homeless shelters, those are exactly the sort of circumstances that don't allow for social distancing and that encourage the spread of COVID-19.
And the court ruled it was basically the liberal wing of the court, which was trying to extend it. New York's own eviction moratorium had had a run in as well with the Supreme Court recently. What happened there?
Yeah, it was slightly different. In the federal moratorium, the Supreme Court essentially ruled that the CDC had overstepped its authority. When it came to the New York moratorium, what the court said is that because landlords were not given a chance to challenge the hardship declaration that tenants could file, landlords were not being awarded a due process. So that's almost, in some ways, I think that's almost worse, right? Because what they're saying with the New York moratorium is actually that the moratorium shouldn't be in place at all. And that's just really terrifying when we know it's something that, as Peter has said, is saving lives during a pandemic and is preventing people from the lifelong negative impacts that an eviction can cause. We're hopeful that in New York State, our legislature is going to reconvene this week, address the weaknesses of our moratorium that the Supreme Court raised, and put hopefully some new protections in place.
Now, Peter, the Supreme Court's ruling was just a few days ago, but to your knowledge, are we already seeing people get evicted across the country?
So there was a significant backlog of cases in some jurisdictions where, you know, the CDC moratorium that had been in place allowed cases to be filed, and some jurisdictions were conducting hearings. Some were even continuing to issue evictions despite the moratorium. What I'm concerned about, you know, today, tomorrow, is that there are going to be jurisdictions that have gotten cases all the way up to the judgment stage and just haven't issued writs, haven't sent sheriffs out to actually evict people. But I think we could be seeing that in some places, you know, as early as today. And then over the coming days and weeks, I'm concerned that we will see a big upsurge in the number of cases that are being filed. You know, these are the cases that landlords held off on filing over the course of the last 11 months when the CDC moratorium was in place. And you know, especially in areas where the dispersal of emergency rental assistance has been slow, and I think we're going to see a big jump in the number of cases that are being filed. There are places where if you have applied for rental assistance, that case can't move forward. And there are still states that have state level protections in place. And hopefully New York rejoins that list this week. But the protections right now are as few as we've seen since the start of the pandemic.
And are you particularly worried about certain parts of the country that might have, stronger real estate lobbies, landlord lobbies, people who are just really pushing for these evictions to start ramping up?
Absolutely. You know, there were broad variations in landlord-tenant law across the country prior to the pandemic. And we know that there are some states where it's, you know, riskier to be a tenant than others. So, you know, if you're in Houston, you have fewer protections against eviction under normal circumstances than you do, you know, here in New York. And I think places like Florida, like Georgia, Ohio, and Texas, where that don't have a lot of protections normally, those are places that we could see a big upswing in eviction cases very, very quickly.
Peter, is Congress planning to step in and do its job? I mean, what's likely to happen on the federal front?
I would be surprised if there was congressional action at the federal level at this point. If there were votes for this in Congress, we would have seen action already. And I just don't think that's going to happen, which means that at this point, it's up to the states.
What's with this inaction in Congress? Why are they not addressing this?
Well, I think, first of all, it's important to recognize that there was, you know, there were a tremendous number of eviction cases occurring in this country prior to the pandemic. You know, so in 2016, there were 3.7 million eviction cases filed in this country. Over the last 11 months, with the CDC moratorium in place, there have been half as many as we would normally expect. We have seen policy responses that have helped to keep the sort of the overall number of eviction cases much lower than normal. And Congress has taken action to appropriate over $46 billion in emergency rental assistance, which is, you know, a vast sum of money. You know, we're talking there nearly the annual budget of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And there has been action, but I think now there, especially with the Supreme Court's decision, the options that are available to the administration are limited, and Congress's willingness to take on this issue is apparently pretty limited as well.
Sia, let's get back to the issue of New York State and what seems to be the inaction of the Assembly, the legislature, that is, to step in and really offer resources. What would that look like, and why hasn't that really kicked in so far?
Well, I am hopeful that this week, with a new governor and the legislature returning to session for the first time since June, we will see some movement on increasing eviction protections for renters during the pandemic and getting rental assistance money out the door. So in New York, we're also quite lucky, right? Because we, before the pandemic, had some of the most robust tenant protections in the country, tenant protections that were hard fought for and hard to win. So we are in a better place than most here in New York, and it's still not a really good place. So we'll see what happens this week when the legislature reconvenes and what our new governor is willing to do.
And our new governor would be Kathy Hochul, who replaced Andrew Cuomo just a couple weeks ago. And what sort of messages has she offered on this issue?
Well, this is really the first issue that has come across her desk. I mean, she was just appointed governor early last week. And what she inherited was a longstanding housing crisis with 92,000 New Yorkers homeless, hundreds of thousands behind on rent, and a completely colossal failure of a rental assistance program. So from the jump, she has been confronted every single day with this crisis. And you know, I think that she knows that she's going to have to take action and do something different to really turn the page on this COVID-19 rent debt crisis.
All right. No honeymoon period for our first woman governor. Let's hear from a landlord representative now. This is Jay Martin of the Community Housing Improvement Program, or CHIP. He represents several thousand building owners.
There are many procedures put in place to protect tenants, to allow them to apply for this fund, to delay the eviction proceedings. Property owners are not in the process of wanting to throw people out during a global pandemic. They're simply requiring funds to keep the housing that they're providing for free functioning. There has been no delay in their property taxes. There's been no delay on their mortgage payments due. All those arrears and all those ability to defer their mortgage payments, that's gone, over with. They still have to pay their mortgages. They still have to pay their property taxes. So the only way that they can continue to function from a legal and business perspective is to file these eviction paperwork proceedings.
So, Sia, help me understand this. On one hand, he's saying that that landlords are put in the awkward position having to keep on making their mortgage payments and their property taxes. On the other hand, he's saying this is more of a formality. We're not looking at this sort of like this deluge of eviction proceedings. Let's take the first part before we get to the second one. Are landlords, in fact, in an awkward position of having to keep on doing this? And why is that, you know, given that we're almost a year and a half into this pandemic?
Yeah, so the reality is that New York's eviction moratorium both includes an eviction moratorium and a foreclosure moratorium. So the fact that landlords have no protections during this moment is simply false. They have the same ability to defer payments as renters do. And again, an eviction moratorium doesn't mean that the rent is not eventually due. It just means that as the pandemic proceeds, you're not going to be taken to court for that back rent. And so landlords are actually in the same boat vis-a-vis their mortgage payments here in New York State. And that part of the moratorium, the foreclosure moratorium, was not struck down, and that is still in place. So that's just important to note here. The second thing to note is that landlords are just in a much stronger financial position than renters on the whole, by virtue of the fact that they own property. They are able to get access to equity. They're able to get access to savings and wealth that renters on the whole largely don't have. I'm sure Peter could say more about this just in general, but landlords are much more financially stable than renters, and it's somewhat insulting to be told that that's simply not true.
Peter, you want to weigh in there?
Yeah, you know, I agree with C entirely that, you know, the typical renter in this country has little or nothing in the way of savings to rely on, whereas the typical landlord obviously has the wherewithal to purchase and hopefully maintain an apartment building. There's a vast difference between those two positions. And while there have been obviously considerable delays, especially here in New York, with the dispersal of emergency rental assistance, the money that is out there and that is available should be more than enough to make up for the full rental arrearages that we've seen in this country over the course of the pandemic. You know, it's not as though the money isn't there and that money won't be going to landlords. You know, the financial case for needing to file an eviction right now is pretty weak.
Real quick, are we likely to see lots of people out on the street in the coming months or a year from now?
I certainly hope not. We are going to fight as hard as we can to prevent that from happening. And that means increasing outreach to sign people up for rental assistance. It means fighting harder in the legislature than ever before to extend eviction protections and making sure that tenants know their rights. But I think what Peter raised earlier about the crisis of eviction that existed in this country and in the state before the pandemic is the thing that's hanging over all of our heads. Prior to the eviction, the eviction moratoriums, over 100 people were evicted in New York State every single day. And those are just the evictions that happened in the court. Lots and lots of people self-evict. So we are certainly, certainly afraid of the long-term crisis of poverty that the pandemic has caused. And people's long-term ability to pay their rent. You know, it's not just emergency rental assistance that we need. The fact is many, many, many more people are unemployed. Many, many, many more people are now underemployed and unable to afford their rent. So this crisis is going to have lasting impacts beyond what these emergency interventions like emergency rental assistance and eviction moratoriums can really solve for.
Sia Weaver is a campaign coordinator of Housing Justice for All in New York. Peter Hepburn is an assistant professor of sociology at Rutgers University Newark and part of the Eviction Lab at Princeton University. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.